Every business owner listening to this podcast right now is financing all of their equipment purchases, whether they know it or not. And most of them have never stopped to ask, who's getting rich off of this?
Nelson Nash taught us to rethink our thinking. You are always dealing with borrowed money. Because you've only been taught to think about the monthly payment. Keep it manageable, get the tax write-off, rinse and repeat for a lifetime. But nobody's showing you where the actual money is going and who's building wealth off the back of your business.
Today, we're going to look at three ways that most business owners are financing their equipment and why two of those ways are quietly making somebody else rich. Now, even if you're not a business owner, this can apply to you because as Paul and I are going to show you, we were able to finance another business owner's equipment for him. Then we're going to show you a different way to think about it, a system where you're the one who benefits.
All of his money was locked up in his 401k and the walls of his house.
And what you're going to learn in this episode is why the three most common ways to finance business equipment is making somebody else rich.
And how the infinite banking concept flips the script so your equipment purchases build your wealth, not a lender's.
We'll talk about the real story of Troy, a business owner who was undercapitalized and we had to step in and save him.
And finally, who this concept works for and who it doesn't. No hype, just straight talk.
This is The Wealth Warehouse. I'm David Beffert.
And I'm Paul Fougere.
Let's get into it. Well, Paul, I don't know about you, but I had a fun weekend at baseball. Baseball tournaments are back in swing. No pun intended.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So that was my all day Saturday. That'll be, I think, next weekend and the following weekend as well.
Yeah, we're in prime boating season now. We took Tammy's parents' boat out yesterday for Mother's Day and did a little, you know, maybe a 1 hour cruise around the lake. It's a big boat, so it's expensive. So you can't drive it that much. You know, gas is like $5 a gallon or whatever. So, but it was nice. And then Tammy docked it like a champ. You know, because it's, you know, it's a 35 footer, twin screws. So you have to like manipulate the throttles and the transmissions to turn the boat like on its axis.
And, wow, that's impressive. Dude, that's why I don't have a boat. When could I ever use it? Like with kids and sports in the summer. Like there's all this, so many people I know have boats. And unless they live on the lake and the boat's in their backyard, they get out on it maybe once a month in the summer because too many kids stuff.
A lot of too much kid crap and our summer's pretty free. I mean, Carmel's gonna have some cross country track practice or whatever starting in June, but you know, it's not really gonna be in the way. And then where our boat is right over there. So it's like it's for the first time ever, right? It's nice. We can just go out for a little cruise if we want and come back and we're at our house basically. So
I'll tell you what, I know how I wouldn't be buying a boat if I do get a boat someday. I'm not going to be leasing it, and I'm not going to be going to the bank to get financing on it. I don't even know, like, what's financing like for a boat versus a car? Is it worse?
I'm trying to think back to what, you know, we bought in 2014. I don't remember what the rate was. I think it's similar to maybe used car rates.
Okay. Brand new cars.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. But not terrible.
Okay.
Not terrible. Yeah. Single digits for sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, in either case, I'm not going to do either of those things, right? Because I'm well capitalized. I'll just use my own banking system I've already created. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I mean, we're talking about boats, which are a fun thing. Maybe if you got a business and you got a business excuse for a boat, you can make that a business, equipment purchase.
Sure.
But most business owners have been told that leasing is smart. You know, the accountant signs off on it. The CPA does it. Dealers love it, of course. But here's what they're not told is that every payment you make towards that is building somebody else's wealth. Right?
Oh, without question.
Yeah. And leasing is the absolute worst. And Nelson talks about it in what we got here, fifth edition, Becoming Your Own Banker. You know, Nelson talks about the different, talking about cars, like leasing is the absolute worst thing you could do. And I don't know what the percentages are. Maybe David, our producer, can look it up. But what percentage of luxury vehicles on the road today in America are leased versus owned outright?
You know, I don't know what it is today, but Nelson alluded to it in the book, right? Where he's like, go to any, and he's, of course, he's referring to like BMW, Audi, Mercedes-Benz, whoever else, right? Like,
And he didn't like use specific numbers, but I think he said it would shock you to know what percentage are leased. And we leased one vehicle once, a Hyundai that Tammy took to Kentucky when I stayed in Fort Bliss, Texas. And it was, you know, it was a cheap car. It was like a $13,000 car, right? And we leased it for like $208 a month. So, but it had a purpose. I didn't want to own this vehicle after. In hindsight, I should have just bought the damn thing, right? Should have just bought it.
Hmm. That's it. I would have. Holy cow.
That tracks, though, right? So our producer just said it's roughly 17% down from 30% a few years ago. That makes sense because what happened? Interest rates dropped to nothing.
Hmm.
So, you know, people could get 5 years, 0%, 6 years, 0%, right? So it really is a factor of interest rates, I think, too, is how people kind of. But again, you know, how many people are turning them in 3 years and they buy another one? So this cycle is just, you know, it's over and over and over. And I think that's Nelson's overall point, is that money is flowing away from you regardless, but it's flowing, you know, a lease is a thing you never get out of, really. You turn it in, you get the next one, turn it in, get the next one.
Yeah, I mean,
there's
one short period of time where you could have leased a vehicle and sold it back to the dealer for more than what you would have had to pay for it, you know, after COVID, right? People were making money on these leases after they were at the end of their term. It was unreal. They could sell it back for more than they made money on leases. So you'll never be able to predict that. But I leased a car once years ago, and it was like $200 a month. It was a Toyota Camry, right? Nice. I ended up after a year and a half selling my lease to my neighbor and getting rid of it. So I was able to get out of that lease by just selling it to somebody else. But, you know, to make leases even worse, here's what else they'll do. They'll say, well, hey, you want to lease this car? It's $400 a month. But if you put $10,000 down, you can lease it for just $200 a month or something ridiculous like that, you know? And people are like, oh, cool. I've got that much in the bank. I'll do it. Well, what you don't realize is, if you roll off the lot and you get in a car accident the next day, you're not recovering any of that money.
No.
Like putting money down on a lease is like making a bad problem worse. It's like the dumbest thing you possibly ever do with your money.
Yeah. I mean, it's a depreciating, you know, thing, right? Yeah. You need it to go to work or whatever, but it's, oh my God. But yeah, so a lot of the leases you look at, you see the little ads on YouTube or on television. And if you read that fine print, sometimes it's in the big letters, but a lot of time it's in the fine print. You know, this is with $4,000 down, right? So it's like closing costs, right?
Right.
It's like these little line items that are like just, you know, there's tax, title, license, down payment, you know, whatever, proof of insurance, you know, you know, what are all the things, right? And it adds up to thousands and thousands of dollars that you'll never see again.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, people do that with more than just cars. Plenty of business owners lease equipment. And it makes sense, like when you think of like at the surface level, like, okay, maybe this makes sense because it's just a small amount of payment going out every month relative to what it would be if I were to buy the thing outright or, you know, get bank financing or something like that. But at the end of the day, you build zero equity in it. You got nothing to show for it. Yeah, it's maintenance free because, you know, it's always going to be new. So you don't have to worry about maintenance, which is a good thing. But it's one of those things like the easy button. But what always comes with the easy button are penalties. Like there's a cost to convenience. And if you're looking at leasing, like just the ease of it, yes, it's very easy. But there's a cost to it. That financial cost is steep over time, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, from the infinite banking concept perspective, maybe you're a leaser and you've decided that's how you're always going to do it just because you like every 39 months, every 36 months. Why is it 39 months on some of them? Like, it's weird. But there's got to be a reason. I don't know what it is, but
yeah,
ours was a 39-month lease. And I asked the guy, I was like, why is it not 36? Like, anyway. But if they were playing honest banker, and I'm going to, you know, kind of, this is a random thought that just popped into my brain here. If they're going to play honest banker, they should pay the retail for a purchase on that car, you know, financed at 48 months or 60 months or whatever, take that difference and capitalize it. That'd be a way to play honest banker.
and lose less over time. But right. They're not going to do that, right? It's just, oh, this is beer money, whatever.
Yep.
You were talking about, you know, a business owner and equipment. And I was thinking about this. I saw an ad the other day for commercial space. And it came, and it was either, was it a restaurant maybe? Anyway, but it came, the owner of the space, of the building, also owned all of the equipment inside of it that would be leased out to, you know, a new renter, right?
Right.
I thought that was, I was like, oh, that's interesting. You own all the stuff in it. So no different than, I guess, the old barbershop I used to go to in Kentucky. He owned the barbershop. Mm-hmm. Well, he owned the business. He leased the space, but then in turn, he leased the seats in it to the other barbers.
Yeah.
$50 a day per seat.
Yeah, that's usually what they do. Yeah, my barber does the same thing.
Yep. So I thought, I was like, oh, interesting.
Well, it's two different businesses too. I mean, you've got you know, probably two different entities as well. One with the equipment, one with the actual physical location. So it's a good business model.
Yeah, absolutely. But what they're not in is the banking business. And that's what we're going to tie in for you today.
Right. So, you know, we talked lease, but there's also, you know, the other way business owners are getting equipment is bank financing.
Of course.
Getting a bank loan. Right. I mean, that's usually, we all know three ways to go about getting a vehicle is financing, pay cash, and then lease. Well, lease is obviously the least desirable. And it's good to hear only 17% of luxury vehicles on the street are leased. I thought it'd be much higher than that. But so that's good. I'm glad to hear that. We got, you know, 83% of the American public who are a little smarter than that. now it makes sense if you're, you know, if you got a fake it till you make it. And your job requires something like that, right? Yeah. But no, the other way is a bank loan, right? And everybody understands that, you know, it's probably better than leasing because you're at least earning, you're working towards ownership.
Correct.
It's more or less like lease to own. I mean, you're paying interest, but at least you got some equity with every single payment that's going back. You got some equity. So at the end of the day, you have something that's worth value. It's worth far less than it was when you first got it. And you've already written it off, I'm sure, but it's, you know, you got something that's got some value.
Yeah. And for those frugal people out there that are living within their means and can kind of deflect Parkinson's law and all these, all this other temptation, because we're in a consumer, you know, you're just bombarded with ads to buy stuff, whether it's on Instagram, YouTube, just everywhere is an ad, right? But if you can keep a car, like, you know, Dave had that F-150 for years. I still have my 2012 Audi. It's been paid for a decade at least, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I've gotten good use out of that piece of equipment.
Right. Yep. But, you know, it you're still building somebody else's income every time you're, there's a reason banks don't buy equipment and then lease that out. Because it's more valuable to just lend the money to somebody else to go buy a piece of equipment. You know, like lending money is the most profitable business in the world. That's what banks do.
Yep.
There's a reason they don't buy more real estate. It's because reselling money is a lot easier, a lot safer, and they can earn a lot more.
Right. This is a beautiful house, but they don't want it.
They don't want it.
They don't want it.
No. And if you want proof of that, during the financial crisis of 08, there were people that could live in their house for a good 18 months without making a mortgage payment, and they were never foreclosed on.
Right.
And why, people ask? I can't believe the banks would do that. Well, the reason is because they didn't want their note to go bad, because they're making more money on that note than your measly little interest payment going to them every month is making them. That's why banks love lending money, because they get another tool called a note that creates a lot more value for them on the back end of banking. Yep. But
all about anyway. The paper.
Yeah, paper. Right. Yeah. That's the chicken or the egg.
Yeah, it really is. Producer Dave was talking about, you know, how does a new business owner, you know, how does he finance his equipment or her equipment or whatever? And a lot of time it's, you know, it's their own seed capital. You know, it's money they've been socking away. Like a squirrel hoarding, you know, acorns, and they self-fund, or they use private money, right, David? We've already talked about that in this example today with the trucking company, but that's Or that's what we're going to talk about, I guess.
Yeah.
That's
what, because business, I mean, banks don't like entrepreneurs right off the bat. Like, you got to have a couple years of history. I mean, I remember I was applying for a first lien HELOC on my house years ago when I was still in corporate America, going through the process to get rid of my mortgage and just have a HELOC replace it completely. Because I heard about this cool strategy and I wanted to do it. Well, during the underwriting process, I quit my job and I went full-time self-employed entrepreneur. As soon as they discovered that, they said, you're not approved.
Right.
Like, doesn't matter how much equity you have in your home. Nope, we're not going to do this for you because you're just a business owner and most businesses fail in the first 5 years. So they don't.
They're gauging the risk on ability to pay.
Yeah. What's your ability to repay? Now you don't have a W-2 income. We need verification a couple years worth that your income is enough to make to service this note, service this loan. Right. So, yeah, you got to have capital in the beginning when you start out a business, or you're going to be borrowing from mom, borrowing from your brother, borrowing from your buddy Paul to do your house flipping business like I did in 2018.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you get funding as a new business. But then what's the third way? And this is the one that shocks most business owners when you tell them you're financing doing this third way when they pay cash. Mm-hmm. Right. So they think, oh, I pay cash for everything. You know, and some, I get it. Some people have been through like a crisis, like the 08, they lost everything because they were highly leveraged. And from that point forward, they said, you know what? I'm only paying cash from now on, so nobody can ever take my stuff away. And I get that. That's like a psychological thing. And if that makes you comfortable, those same people probably understand that they could be doing more financially. Like I follow a guy who owns, he's like worth $800 million. He owns 5 homes. He paid all of them in cash. And he admitted, this is probably not the best financial move. But I've been on the other side of this where I lost everything, got wiped out. And I said, I'll never let that happen again. So he can sleep at night, right? But how are you still financing that equipment if you paid cash?
Yeah. Well, Nelson talks about it in the book, but you have to value your own capital. As soon as you pay cash for that widget, car, house, education, tuition, you know, whatever it is, you have permanently interrupted the compounding of that money. Right. So there's an opportunity cost to paying cash. There's an opportunity cost in any financial transaction. But when you pay cash, you are permanently disrupting the growth of that money. And I would say that a cash payer, IBC is, you know, the infinite banking concept is perfect to implement, is perfect strategy to implement because you already have the correct behavior and the correct mindset. You're living within your means. You're able to capitalize. We're just going to, you know, change one thing that will actually give you more cash later in, you know, in a few years, and then also later in life to keep paying cash. But you're just going to change one little mechanism in there. So I think, you know, all the right behaviors, just you have to take one step further and just think about it a little bit deeper and realize, hey, and we can show you the simple math. You're losing money. You can do the same thing with this. You still own the car as soon as you leave the dealership, or you're still in the house or whatever. We're going to put this right in the middle of that.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the traditional system does not allow your capital to be in two places at once. It just doesn't. But if you create your own system, you get outside of the traditional system, create your own private system. You can literally have your capital working in two or more places at the exact same time. And that's what we're going to show you. Now, obviously, your business needs equipment, so that's not the problem, whether or not you get the equipment. It's who benefits from financing that equipment.
So whether you're leasing, financing, or paying cash, you're losing in all three of those scenarios. There's a fourth option.
So let's talk about the infinite banking concept and what this system is really all about. Now, we know there's a process of banking. There's also a product that you need to bank with. Well, when most people hear whole life insurance, they just tune out. They're done because of somebody else's misconceptions about what this is. And that's exactly why this strategy has stayed secret for so long. Stay with us, because it's not about insurance. It's all about controlling your own capital.
The infinite banking concept is the practice of using a specially structured dividend-paying whole life insurance policy to create your own private banking system. You fund it. It grows, guaranteed, with dividends on top. When you need capital for anything, an investment or an opportunity or an emergency, it's there. You borrow against the cash value of the contract, not from yourself. And here's the part that changes everything. Even when you have money leveraged against your contract, the contract still grows uninterrupted on the full amount. And the loan repayments you make flow back in your direction, not the bank's, because you are the bank.
All right, so let's get into how this works. So we're going to be referencing page 51 in Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker, the equipment financing section. Now, he's got some charts and, you know, some graphs in here, illustrations. That's all, it's kind of superfluous. You don't need it. It's there as an example. Don't pay too much attention to it. Really, what you want to get down to are the principles and the behavior of somebody who is capitalizing themselves in order to be able to finance their own equipment purchases. So how that starts, like Paul said, you start with a mutual life insurance company, dividend paying whole life insurance, cash value policy, and you accumulate capital. You know, the biggest problem we see with business owners is typically they're highly undercapitalized, right? They've got the smarts, they've got revenue, they've got even decent cash flow. You know, they're profitable. They know what they're doing. They're experts in their craft and their field. They're just severely undercapitalized because as soon as money comes in, it goes back out for something, whether that's new equipment or, you know, the inventory, payroll, whatever it may be, but it never gets captured anywhere permanently to be able to use over and over and over and be leveraged while it continues to grow at the same time. That's really what this is all about. So how's that? I mean, what's it look like to take a loan from your insurance policy or from the insurance company, Paul, versus walking into the bank and trying to get a loan?
Well, unlike, you know, having to go into the bank, and I've been in banks lately because we're opening up this other business and starting some accounts, and it's just so annoying going in there, right? With my life insurance contracts, I can grab my phone here. I can go to my little Safari here because it's an iPhone, not a. So if you have an Android, you know, I guess you can do that with those things.
Just don't text me.
Just don't text me. But no, it's as simple as I can log into my computer, my phone, whatever, pick one of the policies that has the adequate cash value that I'm looking for. And I click, you know, I need $50,000 because I want to buy a new car. And there's no credit check. I don't have to talk to anybody. And they don't care what it's for. And in a couple of days, the money is direct deposited into my checking account of choice. And that's it. Literally, and if you're our clients, we've shown you this with our own stuff. And then as you get into it and you start to kind of interact with your own policies portal, you know, you see it. And I've had clients, you know, some early on guys, and my buddy Sean, he took up like a $10 policy loan or $100 policy loan or something just to test it.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it really worked. I was like, yeah.
It worked just like you said. So, you know, and one thing I've noticed with insurance companies is whether you've got $10,000 in cash value or $1 million in cash value, you're treated the same. Mm-hmm. It's not like you walk into a bank, if you got $1 million in the bank, they're going to treat you. They're going to roll out the red carpet for you, right? If you got $10,000 in the bank, they're going to make you wait in line. And they're not going to, you know, they're going to treat you like just like a number. Maybe they'll learn your name if you have $1 million in the bank. Well, the life insurance companies from day one treat you like you've been there forever. And the fact that you're first in line to access loans from the insurance company, it doesn't matter about your history. The only thing that matters is how much equity have you built in your policy along the way or your system of policies. That's what you have access to. It doesn't matter. Like I said, it could be $10,000 that you've built up, they're going to treat you the same as they treat somebody with $10 million in cash value.
That's right. Dave, I want to point out on the top of page 51 in equipment financing, and I had this underlined from God knows when I first read it, I guess, but you know, you're page 51, right? He says, now that we have established the fact that a dividend paying life insurance policy has all the characteristics of a banking system, let's refresh your memory on the steps it takes to get into the banking business. And then he goes on. But that's very important, right? You're in your business. You're a highly compensated employee. You're a doctor. You're a nurse. You're a fireman, police officer, whatever, pilot, doesn't matter. Well, you're a business owner. The other business that you're not in, but you need to get into as soon as possible, is the banking business. And this is what Nelson's talking about. This is how you do it.
Yeah, anyway, absolutely. And one of the greatest things about those loans, you already talked about how easy it is to take a loan, but repaying the loan, super easy and completely up to you, 100%. Like, how many business owners can predict exactly how much money they're going to make next month?
Right.
I mean, most businesses, they're not even Steven. They're not steady Eddie all the way through. A lot of them are cyclical. I mean, even nonprofit organizations are very cyclical, where they get most of their donations towards the end of the year. Right. So you got to plan that stuff out. It's difficult, right?
Right.
Well, that's where the repayment plan comes in. You determine how much you're going to repay. And if you've got a bad month, guess what? You can take a month off. It's not a big deal. Now, that being said, what does Nelson say in here about repaying your loans and how you should prioritize that? We just did an episode on that not long ago.
Yeah. No, great example. You should definitely prioritize it, because it's money you can continue to use again, right? You make a payment, and a couple weeks later, you could take that payment right back out, right? Because it's a principal-only payment. But this is getting into don't steal the peas, right? If you owned a grocery store, you're going to make, have whoever's shopping for your groceries in your house go out the front door and go through the cash register and pay, just like everybody else, right? Because that's good business. But like you said, there's no defined repayment schedule. So you have complete flexibility on repaying this loan. So again, if you have a month where there's no revenue or maybe you took a month off, whatever it is, no problem. Like, you're in complete control. But of course, you want to pay it back. And Nelson makes a point here, Dave, that if you were going to have to pay for this equipment 15% or 8% or 10%, doesn't matter the number, out to a third-party lender, right, you should at least pay that back into your own system.
Right.
Right. So if you're going to be charged 8% out in the YY world somewhere, you should pay your system back, your own banking system, back at least that amount at that rate.
Yeah. Which, being a business owner, you know how to treat a business. You treat your business like a business. So it's a very natural thing for you to do, to create your own banking system and make that just an extension of your business. You're going to treat your banking system like a business. Like, you got to feed the business, right? So the business can feed you.
Right.
And that's the great thing about this is I love making loan repayments, because it just shows me, hey, I paid back $100. Now I got $100 I can borrow for the next day, anytime I need it.
Yeah. And something else he highlights here in this section, I really like, I reread this entire section today. There's no employees, there's no payroll, there's no, there's nothing, right? This is all you have to do is pay your premium, repay policy loan, pay your premiums, repay policy loans. And that's it. Treat your system with respect. And again, your behavior is going to be the most important factor in the infinite banking when you practice IBC. It's going to be the most important thing is you.
Absolutely. So at the end of the day, you bought your equipment, you've taken a loan from the insurance company that's guaranteed by your policy. Your policy guarantees your ability to take that loan and not default on it. You can't default on it. And the result is you've got equipment that's working for you in your business, making you more money. And you've got your original capital working for you in your banking system, compounding uninterrupted, making you more money. You got the best of both worlds now.
Yeah. And something I just thought about, because again, Nelson mentions it in the book, is when it comes to insuring that equipment, they're going to ask you, do you have a note on this? Who's the note holder? All right, USAA, Navy, Federal, they're going to ask if it's financed. And that does matter. So.
Yep, and they're going to be the additional insured. They're going to be the first person to get paid.
That's right.
Should something happen.
That's right.
As they should, because they're the ones that are taking the risk, giving you the money.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, but when you go through the insurance company, it might be the insurance company's money you're borrowing, but guess what? That title to that equipment is in your name now. It has the insurance company's name is not on that whatsoever. So anything happens to that equipment, you get paid. It's not somebody else first. You're always first.
Another advantage, Dave, right, is, you know, now you're in the banking business, or you've gotten to do what you wanted to do by financing that piece of equipment. You own it. It's in your name. But also your policy, the contract that you borrowed against, or maybe you borrowed against several contracts because this was a large acquisition. Mm-hmm. And you have several branches of your private banking system. That private banking system, your policies, in other words, are still growing uninterrupted. There's a guaranteed rate of growth, right? And then on top of that, there's non-guaranteed dividends, which we've talked about again, very reliable. You're getting all that growth.
You're getting all that growth, but you're also building something that's often overlooked in this conversation, which is the real asset at play here, the death benefit. That Correct. Death benefit that's growing every single year that you make a premium payment, every year you use your dividends to go buy more death benefit, more cash value, it grows every single year. So at the end of the day, you've got your equipment, you got your money that's been compounding, and you've got a permanent asset in this future death benefit that's going to pay out income tax-free to your heirs someday. And what are your heirs going to do with it? Well, maybe they're going to use it to pay the estate taxes on your giant estate that you've accumulated. Or maybe they're going to use that tax-free income to pay out a business partner. Or maybe the business partner wants to pay your heirs out and now they got more cash, but they're going to have cash to be able to take care of all the debts that your business has accrued and to see that your business continues. If that's, you know, how you have it set up and somebody in the family wants to continue that business, they'll have the cash to do so.
Yeah. And it just puts everybody in a position of financial strength. Right. When, you know, the last thing you want to be worried about is, oh, God, what do we do with this business now? You know, all those things when you're if you practice IBC properly, you're going to end up with, you know, so much life insurance. A lot of that just, you know, at least financially won't matter.
Yeah. You know, what's funny, I got an email this morning from a client who's a business owner. And he said, hey, I'm working with the Small Business Administration, the SBA, on this loan to go purchase a boutique hotel. Because that's his niche, his boutique hotels. And he said, they require me to have life insurance of $680,000 to cover this loan. Because guess what? The SBA, they ain't stupid. How are you going to pay this back if you're dead?
Right.
Well, let's get some life insurance on you that pays us back if you die. And that's what this does too. Like, you go into a creditor and they say, what are they going to say? They're going to say, hey, you're the key person in this business. Paul, what happens if you walk out the door tomorrow, get hit by a bus full of nuns, and you can no longer run this business because you're not here anymore? Well, guess what? I've got a lot of life insurance. So I'll use my life insurance as a way to guarantee you, the creditor, that you're going to get paid back. Now give me the loan. So that can give you, you know, it's not just you got the cash value, but you've also got this other asset in the death benefit that could help leverage your position with a bank or financing company that, you know, will make that loan an easier process because you can just make them, a beneficiary on your policy.
Yeah, probably an irrevocable one until the debt is paid at least.
Yeah. I mean, I am, I've used that personally when I've loaned money out to somebody. I use insurance policies that they Same. Own collaterally assigned to me so that yep. I'm the first person paid if something yep. happens to them.
Yep. And Dave, you're able to do that because you were well capitalized. So you're, as the lender, in the position of strength, right? It's kind yeah. of like the golden rule, right? Whoever has the gold makes the rule. So it really yeah. is all these other just unseen advantages and intangibles that go along with just being well capitalized and then storing capital in the proper place, dividend paying whole life insurance. So, but again, the typical person, you know, our listeners, I wouldn't say are typical, but they're atypical in a good way. Aren't thinking about those things until it's too late.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's so fun to have these conversations with people to be able to tell them, look, yeah, you've got this cash value. You got this much available. You can go get it whenever you want. Just get online and request that loan. They'll drop it in your bank account. Oh, but guess what? You also have this permanent death benefit. And that creditor who's asking if you have life insurance. Yep. Already done. That makes the speed, because it could take a while to get life insurance in place.
Sure.
So you already got it. Boom. Done. Yeah. Let's sign the loan paperwork and make this happen.
Yep. Yeah. Huge advantage.
Yep. So the bottom line here is that your money is working in two places at the same time. I mean, that's the whole concept of infinite banking. The equipment's working in your business, your money's working in your policy, and you're building another permanent asset. Traditional financing will never give you that. If this episode gave you a different way to think about how your business finances equipment, we'd love a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Take 30 seconds, help other business owners find this show. That's how we grow this community.
And if you're on YouTube, hit subscribe, click the like button, give us a thumbs up, and tell us, what equipment does your business use most? We read every single comment, and we might build an episode around your question.
Till next week. Control your capital.
Or somebody else will.